from experimental history. Infinite midwit. The better I has gotten, the less anxious I've become. A few years ago, when the computers first started talking, it was reasonable to believe that we would soon be in the presence of omnipotent machines. For someone like me, whose job is to produce words on the internet, it seemed like only a matter of time before I would have to fill my pockets with stones and wade into the sea. But we've gotten a closer look at our electric god as it has slouched toward San Francisco to be born, and it isn't quite like I feared. I don't feel like I have access to an on-demand omnipotence. Instead, I can talk to an infinite midwit, a stooge who is always available and very knowledgeable but smart, well, yes and no in weird ways. Even as it has learned to count the number of R's in the word strawberry, even as it has stopped telling people to put glue on their pizza, there's still a hole in the center of its capabilities that's as big as it was in 2022, a hole that shows no signs of shrinking. I only know this because that hole is where I live. Some problems have clear boundaries and verifiable solutions, like what's the cube root of 38,126. These problems require objective intelligence. Other problems are vague and squishy, and it's not clear whether you've solved them or whether they exist at all, like how do I live a good life? These problems require subjective intelligence. Objective intelligence can be trained, reinforced, and validated. Subjective intelligence cannot. It's unfortunate that people use one word to refer to both of these capabilities when in fact they have nothing to do with each other. It is also, ironically, a case of objective intelligence overshadowing subjective intelligence. These skills are obviously and intuitively different, but a century of psychological research has proven that only one of them exists. Over and over again, psychologists have found that all intelligence tests correlate with one another, even when you ostensibly try to test for multiple intelligences. Numbers don't lie, and they all say that there's only one intelligence, the so-called G-factor. The problem is that any test of intelligence is only ever a test of objective intelligence. How do I live a good life? Is not a multiple choice question. Discovering the G-factor again and again is like being surprised that you find the same patch of sidewalk every time you look under the same streetlight. I is pure objective intelligence. That's why each new model comes with a report card instead of a birth certificate. The promise of artificial superintelligence is based on the idea that objective intelligence is the only intelligence. Well, even if there are multiple forms of intelligence out there, that they are fungible. To be an I-maximalist is to believe we are playing under Settlers of Catan rules, where if you have enough of any one resource, you can trade it for any other resource. If you have infinite objective intelligence, then you have infinite everything. So we ought to ask, how well is this bit of magical thinking working out so far? It's hard to judge the subjective intelligence of a machine, both because it's hard to judge subjective intelligence in general, and because LLMs occupy such a small slice of existence. When you meet a human who can do quadratic equations in their head, but can't hold on to a job or a relationship, you know, they're missing something upstairs. But machines don't have lives they can ruin, so all we can do is look at the things they say. And as soon as they string a few sentences together, it's clear there's something wrong. Writing is a task that takes both objective and subjective intelligence. LLMs ace the objective parts the same way they ace every test. You can't fault their grammar, semantics, or syntax. It's remarkable how much consensus there is about this fact among people who care about words, and are all very different kinds of writers. Sun is a tech journalist, anthropologist, Hole is a neuroscientist, a novelist, and Chris as well. His bio says he's a writer and your enemy, and yet all three, E of them, have recently published pieces with the unanimous conclusion that LLMs make crummy writers. But good writing requires an additional bit of juju that makes the prose live and breathe, a light on the inside that can't be quantified or checklisted. And even though I can now produce a plus five paragraph essays, that light has never come on. Sun in the Atlantic, Hole on his Substack, and Chris in the anime. I agree with them. It's cool that I can fold proteins, create websites, fact, tech journal articles, etc., but it can't write anything that I am interested in reading. The problem isn't that it hallucinates or makes mistakes. It's that everything it writes vaguely sucks. I drag my eyes across the words and I feel nothing. That's not quite right, actually. I feel like I would like this to be over as soon as possible. When I see the ideas that the machines think are insightful, I wince. Talking to the computer is like taking a sip of scalding hot coffee. Keep doing it and you'll lose your sense of taste. It's hard to describe exactly what the machines are missing. Have you ever loved someone who once loved you back then didn't anymore? Did you notice how their eyes dimmed? Did you note the disappearance of that subtle wrinkle in the temples that distinguishes a real smile from a fake one? Did you catch it when you stopped being cared for and started being humored? The moment you realize what's happening, you age out of your enchantment. One day you're crawling through a wardrobe to Narnia, and next day you open up the wardrobe and there's nothing but hangers. Talking to an eye feels a bit like that, except without the nice part at the beginning. Of course, that comparison is literally nonsense. Despite what the ancient scholastics might have claimed, there are no actual lights behind anyone's eyes. Despite what your Psych 101 professor might have told you, some people can fake their smiles just fine. I don't have a wardrobe and I've never met a lion or a witch, and yet any human can understand the analogy. They know what it feels like to be dumped, or at least what it feels like to be rejected. The words themselves don't contain that feeling. They are a recipe for creating that feeling inside your own head, to assemble the right set of emotions out of the experiences you have at hand. If I do a good job, the subjective experience that results inside you might resemble the one that originated inside me, but it will never be identical, because we're working with different ingredients. One, the computer doesn't know any of this. It can't know any of this. It can only read the cookbook. It can't taste the meal. Objective knowledge can make your sentences true, but it can't make them alive. Without access to subjective knowledge, you quickly hit a wall. And unlike all previous walls that I have surmounted, you can't overcome this one by scaling, either in the literal or metaphorical sense, because it's a wall with a width you cannot describe and a height you cannot see. That wall is the only reason I'm still here. I would rather die than let a computer write my posts, but I would certainly like to know if it could, in case I need to start gathering pocket stones and locating the nearest sea. And so I check, from time to time, whether the leading AI models can do me better than I can. I won't repost the prose here because it's not even bad enough to be interesting, and because you've already seen it all over the internet. metaphors that don't quite congeal, turns of phrase that sound insightful as long as you don't actually think about them, breathless insistence that every scent and see is a revelation. The result sounds like a version of me that has sustained blunt force trauma to the back of the head and spent years recovering in a hospital where the Wi-Fi, for whatever reason, only lets you log on to LinkedIn if a student sub me.